0702.
WhatsApp Cooks
on 0727021702.
It's 11 minutes after 7 o'clock. Time for us to get into our motoring feature for this week, joined by motoring expert Ernest Page. Ernest, good morning. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast.
Good morning, Guz, and glad to be back. We're talking about some exciting stuff this week, e-tron GT, but also some breaking news in the industry with regard to road safety, and that South Africa's not quite as safe as we would like it to be.
Yeah, I mean, can I be honest? I'm not surprised that South Africa's rated one of the worst places for road safety. The South African roads are the wild, wild west.
It's the wild west out there. It really is.
It's scary.
I've been looking into why that's the case. You know, why do we have a problem like this in South Africa specifically? And I think there's a few factors that play into this. Number one is that we've got long-distance road network. And people go home, people go to, I mean, the common story in South Africa is, I'm going home to the Eastern Cape, I'm going up to Cape Town, I'm going up to Joburg. I don't think many other countries have that as much as we do. So that's the one factor. And then, of course, now you add to that that long-distance driving combined with long-distance taxis, because in the survey they spoke about the fact that we don't wear our seatbelts. In fact, we're one of the worst when it comes to wearing our front seatbelt. Now, when I wore a front seatbelt in a taxi when I was younger, that, you know, the guy in the back, the Gachi guy that counts the money, they would tease me. It's not normal to wear a front seatbelt on a taxi.
Yeah.
And I think that, I'm not blaming the taxis for this one. The taxis have become a necessity based on a need. But that combined with our driving habits, combined with the long distance driving, I think it's a recipe for disaster, and we see the numbers now.
And it's quite interesting that one of the things they mention is our maximum motorway speed limit. So on a highway, usually we're anything between 100 and 120 kilometers per hour. Is that significantly higher than other countries? I know there's a discussion about whether we should be reducing our speed limits. I think we're looking to do 40 in kind of smaller roads and 100 on our freeway, our national roads, because of this issue around speed. But are our current speed limits quite high?
Yeah, they're not. Our speed limits are not high at all, and I don't think reducing the national speed limit is necessarily the answer. It might be the band-aid on the wound, but as someone that's involved with advanced driver training, we always say that speed doesn't kill. You know, the inappropriate use of speed kills. So yes, if you're driving in a speed bump area with kids running around, you probably shouldn't be doing 60, you probably should be doing 40. So I do understand that. But when it comes to highway driving, I think it's our driving habits that's the issue, and not lowering the speed limit. I don't think that's going to fix the problem, because people drive over the speed limit anyway. It's the lawlessness that's the issue. And, you know, we need to figure out a way to control that law, manage that law, and the rules that are implemented start to fix those. The city of Cape Town recently went on a drive to police number plates. So that's a good start, because a lot of cars out there are illegally registered. A lot of cars are illegally driven because people don't have driver's license. So I hate to say it, both driver's license.
Yeah, I mean, we know there's the issue of huge corruption at testing centres, some of it often involving driving schools. I know I had to change when I was getting my license. I had to change driving schools because the one that I had initially wasn't actually interested in teaching me how to drive. Their plan was they're going to teach me, I guess, the basics, but then they knew someone who knew someone at a particular driving center, and that's how I was going to get my license. And I said, I actually want to learn how to drive. I don't want to buy my license. So then I had to leave that driving school and find another driving school that actually taught me how to drive, because there is this...
The same amount of resources were put into... Let's find out who is corrupt in the space.
Yeah.
That would be a much better use of resources. Someone came to me the other day and said, no, I've got a connection, I can get my license. I said, no, dude, that's not the way to do it. That's adding to the problem. So you're 100% right. It's a knife when it comes to these types of things in South Africa.
I wonder, though, our national roads are beautiful. I don't think they have these issues. But I wonder how much of us doing so badly in the survey also has to do with our roads. So the potholes, because I've seen people do really weird things to try and avoid potholes, especially if you have a smaller car and you have a smaller tire.
Yes.
And I wonder, I mean, I don't know that we've looked at this research, but how much of this, us doing so badly in the survey, has to do with, honestly, sometimes the state of our roads is just appalling and people just trying to drive around it. And sometimes that includes you have to make quite reckless moves to get out of that situation, not damage your car. And I wonder what you think about that.
I'm always surprised when I head to the northern part of the country and see how bad the roads are. I have to be honest, Cape Town roads are fantastic for the most part. So it's very strange to me that there's such a separation between the various counties when it comes to, you know, the road network. I do think it plays a part, but I think, and again, I'm not an expert on this topic, but I do think that the big factor is, that is a part of it. The biggest factor to me is that we don't have double lane roads for hundreds of kilometers in certain places. And overtaking in South Africa, because of the way the taxis are structured, the way our systems are structured, they need to get to where they need to get as quickly as possible. There's no timetable on the bus or the taxi and what time it will be in the next town. It needs to get there as quickly as possible. So there's a lot of overtaking happening on national roads in sections for many, many, many kilometers where there's just a double lane sort of national road or double lane main road. So I think that's the thing. I think freeways would help solve a lot of these problems where the cars don't have to drive towards each other. Because I think we've all heard, especially on the news, if I'm listening to 702, there's been a full frontal head-on collision on some road just outside Durban, and two taxis collided, and all of a sudden there's 24 people that are injured. Whereas if it was a normal incident between two cars, there'd be less people injured. And if it was a dual carriageway, we wouldn't have a head-on collision.
The other thing I also think about perhaps as a potential contributor is, especially at night, and I don't know if this is the same, for instance, in Cape Town, but if you're a woman driving at night or after dark, especially if it's very, very late, it becomes very scary to kind of come to a complete stop at any point during your drive. And I know there are some people, many of them women in my lives, who have a rule that unless it is not safe to do so, they do not stop at traffic lights after dark, after midnight, or if it's really, really late.
Yeah.
And I wonder, again, how much of that also contributes, because the reality, many of us are petrified of being hijacked or kidnapped or robbed. Mm-hmm. There is this, you know, at some point in the night, the rules, you see people kind of roll through a red light if it looks like the intersection is empty, because we're all just so petrified of stopping at a light and being caught unawares.
I do think that, again, that's a contributing factor, a lesser one. But I wouldn't recommend that people not do that, especially when it's safe to do so. You know, again, these rules are in place on an appropriately based level. If you know that this is the most dangerous intersection in your town, it's probably not a good idea to stop it, even though technically it's illegal to continue through that section. But we all know that the South African landscape is very unique, and it's such a complex situation because, as you say, for us to stop at the stop street to make it safer, the policing system has to work, and we need to sort out poverty in this country so people aren't trying to take money from each other. So it's such a complex thing. But yes, that's definitely, I think, the contributing factor, a small one, but it would be nice to be able to stop at any robot at any time of night.
Yeah, and just follow the rules of the road all the time. A WhatsApp message here says, good morning, South African drivers are aggressive. Yesterday on my way to work, I arrived first at the traffic circle. This other driver was just forcing to drive through before me. I just left her to pass. Taxi drivers are the worst, and I mentioned this as well. There is a great deal of aggression on the roads, and some of it, I don't know where it's coming from. It always feels as if something is going to pop off on the roads because, and maybe it is about the stress and anxiety of, you know, but there is a great deal of aggression. You know, if you do not take off from the traffic light the minute it goes green, someone is hooting at you.
Oh, yes.
So there is this aggression on the roads.
Yeah. I don't think that's unique to South Africa. I think that's a worldwide phenomenon, at least in many countries, especially the US, Australia, we see a lot of road rage incidents as well. So what that is that people feel much, much safer when they're cruising around in a metal box. So when you're driving around a metal box, you basically got a shield on and no one can touch you now. That's kind of the sentiment. Also, when people drive, the anxiety levels are at a much higher state.
Mm.
So if they get a fright, if someone cuts them off, then all of a sudden their anxiety spikes through the roof. Versus, I always use the example, if I was walking down the street, growing up, we used to walk through Weinberg, it's the area here where parents used to go shopping. People cut you off there all the time, but nobody starts punching in the middle of the street, you know, in the middle of the pavement, just because someone walked in front of you. So, but we do it in a car, then all of a sudden the anxiety spikes, people get upset. So what I do is, and I've certainly been guilty of getting upset behind the wheel, of course. I've got some incidents from back in the day that I hope don't come out. But what I do these days is if something happens like that, just take a breath and walk away. It's not worth confronting the situation. The system, the problem is so systemic that if a taxi driver is going to cut me off, he's not going to be the only one. What I do is if I get a very good behavior from taxis, I often just drive past and give them the thumbs up or show them the two fingers, not the one finger out the window, because it's nice to see there are taxi drivers out there that are just trying to make a living, obeying the rules as much as possible. I've got to say that most of them break certain smaller rules, but they are good guys out there. They are, and I think that's what we need to focus on. If I have a road rage incident or incident with someone that's misbehaving on the road, I just leave them alone. Fine.
We do have Jacqueline in Johannesburg that has a thought on why we rank so poorly with road safety. Jacqueline, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
We're very well, thank you. What's your theory? Why are we so bad on the roads?
I think it's to do with lawlessness. I think it's to do for the past 20-odd years or so. You know, you get caught in traffic, and in this country, most motorists are known for paying a bribe. No, don't, please, please. In other countries, like if you have, like, you're out and you're drinking and you have a beer, it's like, sheesh, no, dude, will you drive? Like, I can't because I've had too much. You will actually lose your license. I've got a relative who stays in England. So they want to go out, they Uber for the night, or somebody else drives and the others party, which is what used to happen here. But I also think, I do think initially it was for the taxis, just doing what they want. Nobody clamps down, and we would see, you'd be at the robots wanting to go right, and a taxi would come up on the left of you and just cut across and cause accidents. We all know that. But I think motorists have got tired. And yesterday, I was telling your guy, I missed most of your conversation now, I was telling the guy who answered the phone, I kid you not, I'm at the robots. I want to go straight. It's load shedding. So there's a queue of note because we know how it works. There's no, you know, the robots don't work properly. And this old guy went into the lane to turn right. And I thought, an old white-haired guy, eh? And I look at this, but his indicator's not on. I thought, he's going to jump. He's actually going to push in and just cause chaos. And you know what? He did exactly that. And I think motorists, Gugu, have got tired. They've got tired of the cops not stepping in and doing what they were meant to do and saying, hey, you're driving badly. Here's a warning. Hey, you, this. We see it all the time. And I think as a country, citizens are tired of some of us try and do the right thing. I'm like you. I like to leave more space behind my car, in front of my car, so I can do. And by the way, I'm a polo driver and have been for many years. So it's like when I hear these things and I've heard it on the radio, polo drivers are bad. It's like, okay, well, not this one. But it's like saying BMWs and Mercs don't have indicators, you know, because they just swap lanes. But so I think it's to do with lawlessness, actually, and watching what's happened, and nothing's ever taken. So you can widen the roads, you can do this, but in other countries, they're very, very, the police force or traffic department are very, very strict. If you break the law, from what I've heard, it's like you want to pee in your pants kind of thing. It's, you don't do it because you'll get your license taken away, and it's not carried out here. I think it's to do with corruption and lawlessness. And people don't care. Besides the buying of licenses, but that can happen in all sorts of countries. So yeah, that's what I think it is. It's come down to that, and I think as a nation we're tired of a whole lot of things and the violence, the load shedding. I think as a nation we're very tired. Watching what has happened to the country, you know, and most of, I'd say probably 90%, 95% of the nation, we want things to work well so things are better for the next generation. You know, so the children can grow up and, So I just think...
I think you hit the nail on the head with that one, because it's such a complex thing. And like you said, these things all tie in together. The fact that people are buying the licenses, the fact that maybe taxi drivers don't go through the proper training. I saw yesterday a taxi cut in front of a police car and nobody did anything. So it means that the rest of us, should the rest of us still play by the rules, if the rules aren't being upheld for everybody. And I get that frustration. So that's a very valid point from Jacqueline there.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call, Jacqueline.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. That's Jacqueline in Joburg. Another WhatsApp here, also linking a few things, and it says, it's from Rika. It says, I wonder to what extent the environment is contributing. So potholes, draining of water, pedestrians, wild stock not behind fences in rural areas, road signs, road markings not being maintained. For instance, when it rains, you cannot see the lanes on the road. We're all just guessing which lane we're meant to be in. Traffic lights not working, restricted visibility, and that's a WhatsApp from Rika. And I think that's also true. All of these things, you know, in addition to human error, bad behavior, I think all of these things...
It is the big one. And I think personal responsibility comes in a lot, because even though all of these things are true, it's still the personal, or the driver's responsibility to drive the appropriate speed. If the visibility dictates, or the road dictates that you have to drive 20 kilometers an hour, we often see people just zipping past at 120 k's an hour. Yesterday it started raining in Cape Town. Within minutes, I got a picture of a WhatsApp picture of a car on the side of the road, because the appropriate speeds aren't maintained. The tires are probably tuned as well. So there's definitely personal responsibility that comes into play, but it's a combination of what has been mentioned here. And it's so difficult, because we'd like to come up with a conclusion at the end of these conversations, Google, but it's frustrating, because I don't think there is one, at least not in my powers at the moment. And like I said, we do driver training all the time, and we're trying to create better drivers out there. But there definitely is a system, systemic issue as well.
Another WhatsApp here, before we get into the car review, says here, a lack of a courteous attitude is causing bad driving habits. And that's coming up a lot, the idea that we're just not nice to each other on the roads, cutting each other off. You know, when you're in, for instance, if you're driving, you know, someone will come up right behind you to get you to move out of the fast lane. Small things that are just, I mean, they're a little bit aggressive. And that's coming up a lot, that we just don't have a courteous, friendly attitude on the roads.
Yes, I always say in closing, if you're not going to do it in person, then why would you do it on the road?
Well, I guess it's because you're in a metal box and you think you're safe, I guess. You think I can behave badly. So tell us about the e-tron. I know Audi's been making quite a bit of noise about their all-electric range. Did you test drive one of their vehicles?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I had the e-tron for 3 days. We did an ignition shoot. And it is Audi's flagship Gran Turismo. Fantastic-looking car. But the price is from the future. This is an electric car from the future, and the price is also from the future, and it's just under 3 million rand. But I don't think the early adopters who are going to buy this car are going to worry about the taxing and the extra sort of cost added on top of this car. I see we don't have that much time for this, so I'm just going to get to my conclusion on this car, is that there's a lot that I love and a lot that I don't like, and that's very strange, because in most cars, I like 10 things and I don't like 2, or I don't like 10 things and I like 2. But in this car, there's so many things to like. It's the speed, the smoothness, the quietness, the futuristic aspect of it, the technology. You know, you feel like Tony Stark when you're driving around. That's certainly what I felt like. It parks really well. It's got four-wheel steering. The range is good. The charging is now fast. Good. I charged it for 45 minutes yesterday, and I got 200 kilometers extra on the tank. You know, the charging situation, it's getting sorted out now. So there's many, many, many positives about this car, but it's not all good news. So the bad news is that you only get a one-year warranty on this car, but you do get an eight-year warranty on the battery. For me, the one-year warranty is a bit interesting. I need to speak to Audi about that and find out more. You could get a much better petrol car and buy your daughter, son, and cousin a small car as well for the price, so there's definitely that. The handling and the braking, it's all very, very good. But once you get to the limit, then it's not fun and not as engaging as the equivalent petrol car. But we can't hold that against this car because all battery-powered cars drive like this. So there's a lot of downside to the driving experience, especially as a performance car for me. But there's a lot of upside. My conclusion is that for the early adopters, they're going to love it. They're going to feel like Tony Stark. They're going to pay too much money. For the rest of us, we'll wait until the technology gets better. And I think that's definitely going to be the case in the future.
For the price tag, because that price tag is quite breathtaking, almost over 3 million rand. Is it worth it for that price? Or should you look at something? Because, I mean, once you're 3 million rand, you're starting at, you know, kind of entry-level Land Rover prices now.
Yes. Look, there's many other cars you could get. You could get the Lexus LS, Audi RS Q8, which is fantastic, G-Class, AMG. You can get the Panamera, which I think would be the obvious choice, and even the Maserati Quattroporte, which is also another good choice. But I don't think it's about price point at this stage. Over 2 million, you've got the top 5% in the country. The early adopter type guys, girls, they want something that they want the first one, they want the newest one, they want the latest one. And the pricing in South Africa is still heavily taxed by government, the fuel levies, etc., all coming into play, import taxes coming into play. So you, as an electric car buyer at this end, you know you're going to be paying more than it's worth. But I think that client doesn't care. They want that car, they're going to pay for that car, and that's what they're going to get.
Okay. Well, Ernest, always a pleasure chatting to you. Thank you so much for your time.